Welcome to the Parents of Goers community. This podcast is for you and for me and for all of us, the stayers, as we choose to thrive with a child on mission. Welcome to the Parents of Goers podcast. So today we have our first actual goers on the podcast, not parents. So welcome, Luke and Jessica.
Hey.
So you're the very first goers we've had on here. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourselves and your team, family, whatever you'd like.
Well, the first thing that we should probably mention is I'm your son. So
yes.
There's a little bit of relationship there.
There we go. That's why you're the first goers, because I had an in. Uh-huh. Yeah. I had an easy in.
Mm-hmm. And you want us to give a little introduction?
Yeah. Just tell us a little bit about, so we can get to know you and like your team. You can maybe talk about my granddaughter. I don't know. You know,
yeah, I'll get started. Cool. We got married in 2015 and a year later moved to China and lived there. For most of our marriage until 2020. And we have been back in the States for the last couple of years, trying to move back overseas. We have a daughter, her name's Joelle.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born in China. That's a little bit about us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Luke, do you want to add anything?
No, I think that's great. We'll expand upon a little bit more of what we did later on, okay. I believe.
Okay. So, Luke, you just wrote a blog post that we released to the parents, because when I speak to other parents in my shoes, other stayers, they often ask, like, do you know what your kids are doing there? Like, what do they actually do? And so we kind of wrote a blog post explaining some of the big picture on that. So let's expand on that a bit. And so why don't you kind of maybe give an overview of what you wrote in that blog post and like, what's the goal? What's the overall goal of your job?
No, I agree. There definitely is a lack of information of what we actually do, because it is pretty different from what a lot of other people's jobs look like and pretty abstract. So
right.
I wrote this in the article, but there even, you know, parents don't understand, but there's a lot of other people that have given me some interesting comments about what we do.
Yeah. What are you, tell me about those.
Yeah. One of them was my, high school track coach, who I had a really good relationship with, and I was kind of excited and telling him about what we were doing overseas. And then he tells me, when are you going to get a real job?
Kind of
in his mind, like what we do is, you know, like he just thought I was going back to school and playing around overseas. Another person was like, you know, kind of after giving them a little summary of what we did, maybe I didn't explain myself super well. They're like, wait, so you just get paid to travel? So there definitely is confusion around this topic.
Right. And as you know, as a Christ follower, you have to choose to respond well to those misconceptions. Yes.
So you asked about the goal.
Yes. What's the goal?
So at the end of the day, I would say that the goal of our team is to plant churches. So
okay. What does that mean? Like plant churches?
Yeah. So the places that we have been and plan to go in Asia are places where there are not many Christians and not many people know about the gospel. And so we go there to be able to share the gospel with people, to have them believe, and then gather together to start new churches. And so that's what we mean when we say church planting is starting new churches and gathering Christians together to be able to do that.
Excellent. So you kind of elaborated on that a bit, and you said a lot of your job involved evangelism, discipleship, and the church. So why don't you define what each of those mean? Evangelism, discipleship, in the church, like what they look like practically.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not just so simple that we kind of land in a foreign country and then we kind of, you know, day two, we go out and say, okay, let's start a church. And we, you know, build a building and then church starts. Not quite that simple.
Right.
And the way that we choose to start churches is we don't want to just find people in other churches and kind of steal them to what we're doing. And then it's like, okay, we started a church, but we want to start from people that have never heard the gospel before that aren't Christians. And we want to start with them and build our church out of people that have become Christians. And so specifically what our team does is we are focused on college students and young professionals. So we're reaching out to young people. We're building relationships with them, whether that's going on college campus and trying to eat meals in the cafeteria, or that's playing basketball with people. We're going to meet just people we've never met before and try to build a relationship with them. As we build a relationship with people, we're going to share what's most important to us, and that's how God has changed our lives with them. And some people will believe that and some people won't.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like a cold call, sitting out on a bench and say, do you believe in Jesus? It's more of a, let's develop a trusted relationship so I can talk to you.
Yeah. And there's, you know, a thousand different ways that we can meet people. But I think that it's always going to go better if we can develop relationship at the same time that we're sharing the gospel with them.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So tell me what, like, so that's more of evangelism.
Yep.
Tell me what you mean by discipleship.
You want to talk about this one, Jessica?
Sure. Yeah. I think one thing I want to add to what Luke is saying is I think one of the reasons it's hard to kind of explain what we do sometimes is it's almost like an art because you're dealing with real people. There's not this formula that's okay, if you do the X, Y, Z, you will have X, Y, Z in this amount of time. And so I think that's something that's kind of special about what we do. And maybe what makes it a little bit more complicated to talk about is just because we could be in one stage of this for a significant amount of time. And because you're working with people, it's complicated. And because you're working with students or young professionals, maybe they're moving a lot. And so maybe you think like, oh, we're heading into the discipleship part of what we want to be doing, or even the church part of what we want to be doing, but then everybody leaves and you kind of have to restart what you had been doing. So that was just one thing I wanted to add to what you were saying. Yeah, discipleship is being able to walk along with people as they encounter Christ. So there have been a lot of people who we have the opportunity to share the gospel with who are excited, who have been waiting to hear that news for whatever reason. And yeah, discipleship is once they kind of give their life to Christ, or maybe they're even just walking toward that, they say, you know what, I want to study the Bible more. I want to understand what it is that you believe and why you believe it and what it does in your life. Yeah, that kind of starts a lot of our discipleship. So the way it's looked for me has been just meeting with people and talking and getting to hear about their life, getting to hear about the questions they have about the Bible and wonder with them what that means. And especially trying to do things overseas in a different cultural context. I think a lot of discipleship is listening and learning for us to say, like, I don't want to just tell you what the right answer is for you to do after reading something in the Bible, but let's think about what this means and how maybe your culture plays into, what scripture says. And so, discipleship is really just kind of more intensely talking about Jesus, normally because the person has kind of led the relationship in that direction. You can share the gospel with anyone in the evangelism stage, but kind of the discipleship is more led by that person wanting to know more, and to grow in their faith.
Yeah, those are great, great examples. Now, the third the third step that you mentioned, Luke, was the church. Now, when you establish a church overseas, does it look like it looks here in America?
Yeah, so our experience in China, the church looked very different from what you normally see in America. And our team was privileged to be able to be a part of starting two house churches. And so they met in people's homes. They didn't have more than 30 people because you couldn't fit any more people in someone's house. And it was kind of a mix of, you know, what people would go to on a Sunday morning and maybe their Bible study, kind of added functions of both of those things together.
Some people here might be familiar with like the house churches, you know, that that pop up. And so maybe that's a more similar model to what you do there. So,
The church section for us involved a lot of, you know, discipleship is one of the ways that people can grow and can learn. But we don't want them to just get that from one person. We want them to be involved in a community of people. And so that's the church.
And the church provides that.
And so a big part of church is the kind of church service. That's not all of what church is, but there's a lot of logistics that go into that, of kind of figuring out how to do that. And our team was really wanting to be involved in starting the church, but we did not want to lead the church forever. And so there was a lot of starting things, training up, and passing off.
Okay. What's your rationale behind that?
Well, we just know, you know, we knew back then we wouldn't be there forever. We thought we might be there a little bit longer.
Right. As did many others. Yes.
But we knew there would come a day when we would leave, and maybe it would be a different, even just a different part of the city, or a different country or whatever it would be. And so just because we weren't the native people there, we wanted it to be able to reach people better than we could if it was led by Chinese people in China for what we did. And so, yeah, we wanted to not just be limited by what we could do in the time frame we could do it, but something that could continue on even after we were gone and could reach people better than we could as foreigners in that context.
Do you find, so let's go into language learning a little bit. So language learning, I think, you know, you're talking about wanting to establish a native church, not an American church in a native and in a foreign culture, but a church with native speakers and the native customs. Why is that important, not to just transfer Western ways and Western ways of worshiping, Western language? Why is it important not to do that, but let the native church flourish?
I mean, I would think of it this way. There is a Chinese church here in Iowa City.
Okay.
And they speak Chinese at the service, and they're doing a great work among Chinese people here in Iowa City.
Okay.
But what they're not doing is they're not reaching native English speakers, you know? And so it's a very similar thing in China. If we had a church that was all in English, basically catered towards, you know, expats there, that's who we would reach, and we could do ministry there. But that's less than 1% of the people who are, you know, in our city. And so we just wanted to do it in such a way that we would be able to reach the majority people of the place that we were in.
Right. Yeah. And I seem to remember you saying something, Luke, about, you know, maybe ways that we preach the gospel in America aren't as effective because of the different, they live in what we call an honor shame culture. We do not live in that kind of culture. So why is that important to keep in the forefront of your mind?
Yeah. Do you want to speak to this, Jessica?
Yeah, I think the thing I think about in this is just like the beauty of the gospel, and that there is sufficiency in the things that we know in America to be able to follow Jesus. And there are aspects of the gospel that we don't understand because of the culture that we come from. And I think something that is beautiful is kind of when we get to go to another culture, we get to see another part of the gospel.
Another facet.
The reason that like Jesus came. And yeah, so I think kind of keeping that in mind, like when we're sharing the gospel, and I think just being able to speak to people kind of in a way that makes sense, mm-hmm. it's just so valuable, right? It's like when you're talking with a child, mm-hmm. are you going to use language that doesn't make any sense to them? No, you're going to explain things in a way that makes sense to them. You want them to understand.
Exactly.
And not that people from other countries are children, but you have to kind of understand where people are at, mm-hmm. and you need to be able to communicate in a way that makes sense to them. You know, mm-hmm. it's not about us when we're over there. Oh, what's most convenient to me? What do I understand? Mm-hmm. I can already speak English, so this seems pretty convenient for me, but it's more about, okay, how can we kind of embody the same spirit as Christ, who mm-hmm. came down and dwelled with us,
yeah,
and wanted to experience humanness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just being able to kind of translate that to going overseas, like what can it look like for me to really understand these people before I just say the things I want to say for mm-hmm. my benefit?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that answered honor and shame.
Well, one time we were over visiting you, and we asked you what you had learned. Maybe you'd only been there 6 months, and you said you felt like you were building spiritual muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you feel like that?
Yeah, I think there's a question kind of coming up, but I think because of the season of life we were in, we had gotten newly married.
Yeah.
Pretty recently graduated from college and just like left the church that we had been in for a while. And going to China, we had friends that were there who were believers, which was great. But getting taken out of your comfort zone and having to feed yourself spiritually is a lot of work.
We don't have to do that as much here in America.
Yeah. Yep, there wasn't already things set up for us to just go and participate in. Even with our friends, it's like, okay, somebody has to come with something to say or something.
Right, you guys are the ones in charge.
Yep, and so I think I just had to take a lot of ownership of my own faith and my own walk to say, there's not anyone who's going to be here who's going to spoon feed me. Like, I have to be able to do this. Not on my own, right? Like God did provide a community for us there, but just having a lot less of that and a lot less of the comfort. So getting stripped of a lot of things and then realizing that maybe in the States, my faith had kind of been held up a little bit. There was a lot of help for me.
Right.
And there just wasn't a lot where we were at, but it was, my faith most likely would not have grown the way that it did without being overseas. And so,
you had to put a lot of effort in
mm-hmm.
to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were talking about language learning a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. I don't know. I speak one language. So, is that hard for your team members?
It is a very big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
For almost everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very big portion of our job hours, especially on the front end of someone coming overseas. So for new people that join our team specifically, they're going to put around 25 hours a week into learning Chinese.
Wow, 25 hours.
Yep. It's a very big part of your job. It isn't the end goal per se, but it is the way that we achieve the end goal is by being able to communicate with people in the language that they
speak. So they can't just kind of hang out and be immersed and learn it.
That's part of it. I think that there's a lot of things that maybe are helpful to do in a classroom context. Like learning how to write, learning correct pronunciation,
right?
Learning how to read, So we encourage a lot that people go and actually use the things that they're learning in the classroom, but I think it's a both and. Mm-hmm.
Do the people where you were, do they mostly approach you and speak Chinese, or did they say, oh, Americans, I want to practice my English?
There was both. Mm-hmm. I think as we learned Chinese more, and if I spoke in Chinese at all, people were kind of relieved that we spoke Chinese. They would speak to us in English if they knew how, which is probably, I don't know, half mm-hmm. the people maybe knew at least a few, you know, words or sentences in English.
Right.
But if I would say 95% of people, if I ask them in Chinese, do you want to speak Chinese or English? They'd say Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because of course it's easier for them. Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. So do some people not do well on the language learning? Is it easier for some and then others really struggle?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Just looking at them. I would say I think the thing is everyone has to put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
And then I think there are some people who put in a lot of effort and don't receive a lot of the benefit.
Huh.
So I think for Luke, put in a lot of time and energy and can speak Chinese very well. It clicks in his brain and it makes sense.
Okay.
And I would say for me, I spent a lot more hours crying over Chinese. It was really hard. It's still,
they
really
say
hard.
It's one of the hardest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We just really jumped in. So, yeah, for me, and I know for other people on our team specifically, it's hard when you feel like you're doing all of the things that you're supposed to do and you're not moving in a way that other people are.
Yeah. How do you encourage people on your team when you're struggling like you have?
Mm-hmm. I think the reminder, we talk about this in a lot of our job, but I think the reminder that it's more about obedience than results,
okay.
which feels really hard when you're studying Chinese for like 25 to 30 hours. You're like, no, I want the results.
Yeah, of course.
But I think just that reminder that it's like the context that we're in and the job that we're in, the thing that we're asking you to do is try. That's all that we're asking you to do. And I think just trying to keep that in your brain is super helpful. Like, okay, my bosses aren't going to be mad at me that I can't pass this test or whatever. Yep. I'll take the semester over, you know, and that wants to provoke our shame to be like,
you're a failure.
I don't want to be behind. I don't want to be the person who doesn't get it, but.
Are native people pretty gentle with you if you don't speak well?
Yeah, I would say if I'm trying to get things done quickly, maybe it's harder, but I feel like in general,
it was
easy enough to even just like pull out my phone and try to remember a word and ask somebody. So in general, it's pretty easy. I think another encouragement I would give people is I have been learning Chinese for almost 6 years now, and it gets better.
Huh.
I think that would be my encouragement. Like,
because
some hump somewhere in the learning curve where things aren't as foreign anymore and things aren't as hard. And that if you just kind of keep trucking along, eventually there'll be a moment, not when you totally get it and everything makes sense, but that like one thing just like clicks. And I think that's my biggest encouragement is if you just keep going, it will get easier and it's not going to look the same as somebody else on the team, but
so don't compare
your own learning process. It gets better.
Yeah. So that kind of leads us into team building.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of your job as well.
Yeah.
What's that look like practically?
Yeah. I think a lot, I hope that this is a comfort to parents, but as leadership, I think a lot of what we do is making sure that the team is healthy and that the team.
And that's not just physical
health. Uh-huh. Not really physical health at all. But like making sure that we have good friendships on the team, that we can trust each other on the team, that we're talking about difficult things on the team. And just having fun together.
Like how much time do you spend all together as a team?
I would say everybody together at least once a week. But then outside of that, we had times where, okay, just the guys are meeting or just the girls are meeting or even going and doing ministry together. And so it's like, it isn't necessarily a special team function, but it's like, okay, let's go share together. Let's go try to meet people together. Let's meet up with this friend together.
I would say you're with someone on the team, a majority of your day every day.
Yeah. They're probably your roommate.
Yeah. It's probably your roommate. It's probably your ministry partner. You're probably having class with them. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, you're probably helping them out to do something, or you're doing, you're discipling them, or they're asking you a question about, you know, something else. So a lot of our time is spent, there's a lot closer than I would say normal coworker relationships on our team. Mm-hmm.
Are a lot of your team members just students in general, like at a local university?
So far. Yep. That's the context that we've been in since moving overseas, is a majority of people are language learning at a university. There have been some exceptions to that, but in general, that's kind of, it seems like a good starting place.
Yeah, and that puts them in context that they're surrounded by other Chinese people. Yeah.
Yep. And just kind of gives you, I don't know, if you're walking on campus and then they ask you what you do there, you're not a student. It's kind of a weird
thing. Yeah, uncomfortable.
I think another layer to it that a lot of jobs don't have is visas. Mm-hmm. So we have to have reasons to be in the countries we're in. And many times student is just a really good way for us to get visas in the country.
Right. Exactly. Okay, so that's, let's go on to what you said third was support raising was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's something that a lot of parents also either don't understand or they're a little bit embarrassed about, or they just need a little more information on that. So can you give that to us?
Yeah. So everyone on our team has a job. We get paid. We get a W-2, all that kind of stuff. But the way that we do that is by raising support. And so the local churches that send us out from America are very generous to us and provide a portion of that support. But there's also another portion. The majority of the money is raised from individual donors. Huh. And so, a part of our job is to develop those relationships, to ask people to be a part of our support teams, and then to be able to just keep people updated on what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So
how do you do that? How do you maintain those relationships, those individual donor relationships?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just, it's been easier being back in the States, being able to call somebody or go visit them. But while we were overseas, I think just being intentional about sending messages to them, asking them how they're doing, right? We don't want it to be a one-way relationship where we have lots of important information to tell you and here it is, but we really want it to be a relationship where we get to hear what's happening in their life and that they get to hear what's happening in our life. So I think it just takes a little bit of intention. I feel like email was kind of, unless we have somebody's phone number, email was a great way, or social media was a good way to just kind of keep those connections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say too, this is a, you know, we said language learning is challenging. Our whole job is probably challenging in different ways, but this is definitely a challenging piece of our job as well. I think for a lot of people, it is difficult for them for multiple reasons. One might be, it's difficult to ask people to help you out, to just put yourself in that vulnerable position to ask, I think is definitely difficult, and it takes effort. It takes humility.
Agreed.
In that position. I think the other thing too is just sometimes people feel like, I don't know that many people that maybe would be willing to, you know, give me money. One of our kind of rule of thumbs is you ask three people and about one person gets back to you and wants to meet and learn about supporting you. And then if you meet with three people, about one of those will say yes, they want to support you. So it's about 1 in 9, around 1 in 10 of the people you actually ask.
Wow.
So for Jessica and I, we currently have 88 supporters. That means we've had, you know, we've asked nearly 1,000 people.
Oh my.
Part of our, you know, support team. So it is a pretty involved process of developing all of those relationships, talking to all those people, and having a lot of meetings to communicate that.
That also requires perseverance. A lot of your job requires perseverance. Yeah. Huh. So you guys, we're going to do some more blog posts, some more podcasts, but so you guys, your roles would be team leaders. What are some special responsibilities maybe that you guys have? And I want to unpack this more fully as we have more of, you know, some team members, maybe some from your team, other teams on roles. So what are some maybe special responsibilities we don't really know about?
Yeah. This is our daughter coming in to say hi.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, Joelle.
Hey,
Joe.
And just to clarify too, Jessica is a part of leading our team, but specifically my co-leader is Jamie, who's another guy on our team.
Okay.
But Jessica's very involved in the leadership of our team.
And don't you have some kind of a member care responsibility?
Yeah,
so you can talk about that because I'm really interested in that as well. But what are some special responsibilities that we wouldn't see maybe?
Yep. So I think one of the things that we do that is helpful for us is, this is specific to our team, but we have monthly check-ins. So at the end of each month, everyone on our team writes a reflection of the last month.
Hmm.
So I have 4 years of reflections of every month. And it kind of starts out like, okay, where are you at? 1 to 10. Where are you at? Give a little explanation of that. What is something that could make that number go up, right?
Yeah.
When I'm at a 5 for this month or whatever it is. And it's like, you know what? Something that could like be helpful is like doing something fun next month or taking longer rest periods or whatever it might be. So helping people realize maybe where they're at and what they would want to do to kind of be in a healthier spot.
Yeah.
We ask about team conflict. So on that form, it asks like, are there any relational tensions that you need to maybe be proactive about? Maybe it's a roommate situation. Maybe it's with leadership, you know, and providing a space for them to be able to just communicate that something is going on,
right,
and helping equip them to say, you know what, now that you've told us, like, what is it that you're going to do about it? Or what do you think is a good next step? Maybe it's a personal thing and maybe it is like going out and being direct with that person.
Right.
And then the end of the form is just kind of like, what was exciting about the last month and what are you looking forward to in your next month? And so it gives us as leadership an opportunity. We're already in community with people. And so we know a lot of that, but I think it's always just helpful to be like, okay, I heard from my teammate throughout the month. I thought they were doing pretty good, but then they filled this out and they were a 4. Like,
yeah,
I must have missed something, or just as they reflect, they realize that was a lot harder than they even knew that it was. And so I think things like that are helpful for leadership to be able to speak
and
into.
for the team members. That's really good for them to have to evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent, it makes me feel so much better and like my child is being cared for and watched out for. So I think just the parents knowing that someone's doing that for their child, that will maybe let them let go a little more and not hold so tightly to that kind of anxiety that some of us have. So that's a good for us to hear, Jessica. How about you, Luke? What is something maybe that you do as a leader that we might not be apparent to us?
Yeah. As a team leader, I think my biggest responsibility is to make sure that everyone has everything they need to do their job well. So I kind of see myself as the, you know, chief problem solver. If someone is saying, hey, I'm having a difficult time support raising, they might come and talk to me. If someone is saying like, hey, I was in this ministry situation, I didn't know what to do or what to say, like, you know, again, I want to be a resource for people on our team. And then there's just like things that we have to do because we have real jobs. Like I did evaluations with all of our team last month. And there's like paperwork that needs to be done. There's, all sorts of things that just need to be done within an organization that kind of like fall on me to just make sure that everyone else I'm doing that so that everyone else kind of can do their job smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are all really good insights, even for me who talk regularly, do you guys, mm-hmm. for me to know like, oh, this is what they're talking about when they say, I'm going to go do this. Or,
yeah.
oh, they're very well taken care of, you know, like almost like you're being the team mama, you know, mm-hmm. Jessica. And so that helps parents on this side of the globe say, oh, my kids are really well cared for. They're part of that family, mm-hmm. you know, that feels very good. Speaking of parents, what is something you wish that the parents of your team members knew? Did anything come to mind? Mm-hmm. Or what way could stayers be more support?
Yeah, I think the thing that I think about is that I would want to encourage parents in is just to be curious, to honestly even just Google questions to ask. Yeah, like you were saying, like we talk a lot and still there's a lot that
I don't know.
Isn't known, you know, and that's, it's kind of like that with normal jobs, right? You know, someone's a doctor, but you don't really know what they
exactly.
do every day.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so I would just encourage parents to be really curious about what their kids are doing. And, I think know that maybe it depends on the parent's relationship with their kids, but you could be an outlet for your kid, when things are difficult. Mm. And so I think remembering, to ask about the good and the bad things, almost like the reflection that I was right. talking about, maybe just thinking of like questions that yeah. are, hey, what were three things you did this last month that you enjoyed or didn't yeah. enjoy? How is team chemistry? Do you feel like you have friends?
I think some parents might be afraid to ask like what's not going well mm-hmm. because they're afraid their child will be unhappy there by talking about it. Mm-hmm. So for you to encourage us to ask that is really a good thing. Gives us yeah. permission.
And I think don't be scared of the answers, because I'm sure over the course of our years in China, there was a lot of really hard things. And it was never that I wanted to reconsider where I was living. It was just hard. Huh. And so I think being curious about those things and not necessarily jumping to conclusions like, well, it's really hard, so they must want to come home.
Yes.
But I think just letting them maybe vent and letting them sit in that and helping them say like, okay, well, is there something you want to do because of that? Or does it feel good to just get that out? You know? Yeah. So maybe not jumping to conclusions about what they're meaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are good words. Yeah. I'll probably recruit you to write a blog post about that.
Great. I'd love to.
Yeah. So Luke, any words about how we could be more supportive?
Yeah, just as I was thinking on that question, I think both parents and goers should be able to just see and respect the sacrifices that the other is making. Mm-hmm.
That's also a good perspective.
That's a good word.
So
good
I think word. That goers, you know, we talked about some of the sacrifices we made with the challenges of sport raising, the challenges of language learning, living in a different country, like, sometimes it's an adventure and sometimes it's hard. So those are maybe more obvious sometimes. You can kind of see some of those.
Yep.
But parents kind of have the silent sacrifice of having their kids not around, you know, holidays when the kids were there and they're not anymore.
Right. Birthdays. You know,
that, mm-hmm. Yeah, the feeling of distance. I think there's a very real sacrifice there as well. The tendency can be for like us to focus on the own sacrifice that we've made.
Mm-hmm.
And so parents are thinking about, oh, it's hard for me. Kids are thinking about, oh, it's hard for me. And then you're not able to even see the sacrifice that the other is making.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like if there's a recognition of both, mm-hmm. It can be a lot more healthy relationship rather than both kind of wanting, hey, look at me, look at how hard it is for me. And then neither, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a miss there.
Yeah. And yeah. I think with that too, like they don't have to cancel each other out either. Like they can both just be there and it's okay. But it's not that, well, I'm sad, so you can't be sad. Or, you know, it's like both could be true that one, maybe your kid is having a hard time and it's hard for you. And those can just sit there together. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a competition of
It's also good for you guys to give permission to parents to be sad, because I have spoken to some moms that say, like, I never let my child see that I'm hurting because I'm afraid that will be hard for them. But I think it's healthy for us to be who we are and share our grief, you know, our grieving and our hard times. So those are very good words and good things for us to think about. Do you have anything else to add?
I don't think so. I kind of, as we started talking about at the beginning, I hope that this does help parents to help realize what their kids do day to day a little bit more.
Yeah.
In recognizing and understanding what we do, maybe it'll help them to feel just a little bit more peace and a little bit more understanding.
I agree. Yeah. I'm hoping with this whole series that I'm hoping to do, as I can recruit, you know, people to help me with it. I'm really just hoping that we can get these lines of communication more. I feel like they're stilted, more even and open and comfortable. Yep. And so not only will that give parents just more ease and comfort and less anxiety, but I think you will increase your retention rate of your missionaries. You know, I really do, because they'll feel supported and they'll feel like their parents are for them. So.
Yeah. And I think maybe just let this be the beginning of a conversation, you know, even to say, hey, I heard about these two people. I listened to their story. Is your story anything like that? So I think a caveat would be, this is our story. This is our team, our organization. And maybe someone's listening to this and they're like, that is not, I don't think that's what my kid does.
And so good.
Being able to ask those questions to be like, is this similar or different from your experience?
That's a really good jumping off point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we do have parents, not just from your team members' parents, but we have a lot of parents listening, you know, from lots of different teams. So really good, good thing, you know, use the podcast that you hear, the blog post you read as a jumping off point. Like, can you tell me how similar or how different that is to your lives? Yeah. Good advice. Yeah. Good advice. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast. And I was going to say, Luke, that you were the first man to be on the podcast, but you're not. Mr. Easton has been on here. Mm. Yes, the very first one. So thanks for joining us, though. And I think this will be incredibly helpful. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yep.